Big show for you here today. It is the running back position preview. That's right. The position you cannot afford to get wrong in fantasy football if you want to win a championship. It's the running backs. Can't fall behind. Got to beware the cliff. All that we're talking about today with Justin Boone. He's got red light players for you. He's got green light players for you. The guys you want to target, the guys you want to avoid, all the things that you need to know about the running back position heading into your fantasy drafts this month. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everyone? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball because position preview week rolls on here, and man, we got a big show ahead of you today because we've got our guy, Justin Boone, in the saddle with me. Boone, running back day. What's going on, man? This is a big one.
Man, a lot going on. It's like a crazy flood of information. And Harmon, I know a thing or two about floods, man, because I've had a couple in my basement with all this crazy rain lately. And I've been dealing with that on top of trying to take in all this info that's coming out of training camps, keep the rankings updated, all that stuff. But that's why we love this time of year, right? Trying to adapt on the fly, trying to get everything ready. So when people are really drafting and it gets very, very busy in those last few weeks before the season, we have everything updated and everybody ready to go.
Well, I hope your basement, you know, can stay flood free, man, because you're right. The information is flooding the timeline here quickly. And yeah, I mean, do I love this time of year?
I'm ready. It's super fun.
It is fun. It is fun. It's just stressful because I'm sure you feel the same way as me where I'm like, oh my God, I know I'm missing something. Whether it's work or like a piece of information. I mean, just think, yeah, you're missing things in your personal life for sure. Forget about that. That's honestly not important at this point. That doesn't matter anymore. See y'all in February, okay? But for now, what really matters is getting everyone's fantasy football teams right, as you mentioned, and that is what we are going to be doing here today with a running back position preview. Because man, this is a big one. All right, everybody's got to get running backs right, as I've been saying on the show, pretty much for the last week and a half since we went daily here. One of the do's and don'ts for Scott and I was we do not want you to fall behind at the running back position. Well, how are you going to do that is by listening to the preview position show today. We're going to look at the overall state of running backs, positions, strategies as we head into this year. We've got the top 12 consensus rankings and where do the cliffs at this position lie. We've got green light, red light, yellow light players, and of course, we will wrap it up with our sleepers. However, before we talk running backs, we do have a little bit of fantasy fallout because as Boone mentioned, news is coming in fast and furious from every angle. This first one comes in from Minnesota as Kyler Murray has officially been named the quarterback one of the Minnesota Vikings. Boone, we thought this would be the case. He would start week one for the Minnesota Vikings. I just thought that this announcement might come, you know, like 10 days ago. Maybe even sooner than that. How are you feeling about Kyler Murray, QB1, Minnesota Vikings, and where are we going from here?
Well, our long global nightmare, should we call it? Our long global nightmare of J.J. McCarthy is finally over. But this isn't anything surprising. We talked about this even before the Vikings brought in Kyler Murray, the idea that the way the team was talking, the way their star receiver, Justin Jefferson, by the end of last season was talking, they had to bring someone else in. They had to get a veteran in there, somebody who could actually run the offense. And everything that's coming out of camp right now, there's been ups and downs day to day. But overall, the talk is that the offense just opens up a little bit more with Kyler. He's willing to push the ball downfield a little bit more. We know what he can do with his legs, of course. And with McCarthy going back to last season, they were kind of trying to hide him in the offense and win in spite of him, right? So this puts him back on the bench. Maybe he'll get a chance to become, you know, the next guy who is initially a bust in his career and then years later gets an opportunity to start somewhere and revitalizes his career that way. But for now, Kyler's out there. And the main thing, you've talked about how maybe the weapons in Minnesota aren't quite as good as everyone thinks. And you're probably right about that to some degree. But really what we care about is Justin Jefferson. And this is going to be good news for Justin Jefferson. It at least puts him back in the conversation to be a guy who could be a wide receiver one in fantasy versus last year when he fell to like the wide receiver three ranks partway through the season. Because we just couldn't trust him. He had his best days when Carson Wentz was playing quarterback for the Vikings. So overall, this is good news for the offense. On top of the things we've talked about all offseason, the offensive line hopefully getting healthier, and just overall seeing a little bit more from the Vikings offense like we saw in years past before last season.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm just...
Such a tepid yeah. Just not feeling it.
I don't know if it's just how long this took to kind of be announced, you know, or if it's even some of the reports from training camp that like McCarthy was actually making a pretty good push, you know, and it actually was having a pretty decent training camp. Maybe I'm totally wrong about this. And sometimes we do this where we talk about football for all year long, and then we end up overthinking things. Sometimes I think we get into August, it's like, okay, I'm glad I changed my mind on this. This is one of those things where probably about 2 months ago, I was like, I think I said to Joel on the show, I'm going to be a Kyler Murray guy this year. And I, by the way, I still actually think Kyler Murray is a perfectly fine fantasy quarterback to draft. I haven't really moved him up or down my rankings really based on any of this. However, when it comes to Justin Jefferson, I do feel like differently about the whole situation probably than I did maybe, like I said, 2 months ago, where now I'm starting to get the feeling, and again, I could be totally wrong, that this is one of those situations where Kyler Murray starts 14 games. He plays himself out. He doesn't really fully push McCarthy aside. He plays just okay enough to, like, by the end of the season, they want to give McCarthy another look. And then McCarthy's playing in the fantasy football playoffs while Justin Jefferson is your wide receiver one. And I'm still ranking Justin Jefferson high, but I did bump him down to my second tier of receivers. And, you know, I'm kind of weighing him against some of those running backs that go on the turn. So I probably had him too aggressively ranked a couple of months ago. And now I think I'm maybe I'm overcorrecting or whatever. I just wish this had gone a little differently, Boone, where 2 days into training camp, they're like, yeah, Kyler Murray's our starter because he's just that much better. Because I'm still kind of a Murray skeptic overall, I would say.
And I think that's fair. He has his red flags. We talked about how he fizzled out in Arizona. He is not the perfect answer. He's not some guy that's going to come in and lift all boats. But they don't need that, right? They just need someone to come in and give like average quarterback play and let everything else they have there, going all the way to the other side of the ball on the defense, let all of that do the work. Just don't let the quarterback position beat you. Don't have a situation where JJ McCarthy's out there and for three quarters, he's giving you nothing. Your offense can't score. And then you have to make some miraculous comeback in the fourth quarter, right? Kyler out there, hopefully, is going to at least lift that a little bit. The coaching is still there. We probably give, you know, Kevin O'Connell too much credit, but I still think he's a good coach. Mm-hmm. And I still think the environment there is a positive one, even if there's not incredible talent other than Jefferson. It's a pretty good cast of skill position players there and guys who are going to get it done. So I'm looking at it now. I think we're probably in the same range. I always had Justin Jefferson more towards that 1-2 turn right at the end of the first round. I've taken him a few times. You know, you don't feel great about it, but I don't really feel great about most guys that go at the end of the first round. For me, I would much rather pick early in the first or even in the middle of the first. I hate when I get a slot at the end there. The good news is that when you come around the turn, I really like those players, but I'm not a huge fan of the guys that I have to take at the end of the first round unless somebody falls to you. So it is what it is in Minnesota, right? I think this offense is much better than what we saw last year. I think there's some real reasons why we can feel good about them. But overall, are we, you know, singing it from the rooftops and feeling great that Kyler Murray is going to come in and this is going to be one of the best offenses in the league? Probably not. Is it going to be better than what we saw last year? I definitely think so.
I think it could probably get Jefferson as low as my 15th overall player, but that's about it. That's about as low as I could go. So still, to me, early second round, mid second round, just some of these running backs. And again, I think this is mostly structural when I'm doing my overall rankings, as we'll kind of talk about throughout the show. But he really is the only one from this offense besides Murray as a low end QB1, high end QB2 and super flex. Jefferson is the only one that I'm proactively targeting in this offense right now. I think everybody else, I'm just going to kind of let the board fall to me there. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I agree. Murray is somebody that I'll take as a late round quarterback if I really miss out on the guys that I like at every other value and then I have to pair two guys late. He's certainly somebody I'll look at in that case. Addison, you know, it's cliche to say, but he's kind of more of that like spike week best ball kind of guy, like wide receiver four flex. But do you really know when you can play him? And you don't have to get into it. I know your thoughts on Addison. This is a running back show. We don't have to get the Harmon take on him. But the backfield, there could be value there. We're going to talk about it a little bit later. There's a couple backs in this backfield that I could see actually make a difference this year in fantasy. So that's one spot where they've made a real commitment that they want to run the ball more. And I think we could see something exciting come out of this backfield, in part where you get these guys, which is just very, very late in drafts.
All right. So hopefully I'm overreacting to this, how long it took. And we just get a really good month of reports out of Minnesota and Kyler Murray. And by week one, I'm bumping Jefferson back up to that like first round range. I don't know. I just feel a little spooked about it today, but I reserve the right to change my mind because this is me changing my mind from how I felt about a month ago with this situation. One thing I'm also a little bit spooked by, Boone, and speaking of the top of the draft, let's talk about one of the best players in the sport and another running back that we are going to talk about later today. We got word from Adam Schefter today that Josh Jacobs and Puka Nacua could face discipline for some off-season actions. We're going to touch on Jacobs later in the show, but just really on quickly on Puka Nacua. He did leave the Rams Cowboys joint practice today with an injury. I do just think, and I kind of continue to have this marinate in my head right now, where I do think the Rams are a very hyper fragile situation. You know, we kind of, Scott and I talked about this a lot, and we all kind of talked about it a lot leading up to last season, and then basically everything went right for them. So now no one talks about it. I'm not sure that's the best way to approach things, but just a reminder that I do think this Rams ecosystem, as great as it is, could be the number one offense in the NFL this year, was the number one offense in the NFL last year, is a little bit on a house of cards. And Puka, you know, Schefter was talking about, he could be in danger of missing the first game of the season. Any issue here with you when you're ranking Nacua, who for me is still my fourth overall player? If he does miss week one, will you bump him down at all, or how do you kind of feel about this situation?
I have him as my fifth overall player, so just one spot behind you there. Yeah, it's concerning. We knew this was always a possibility when the stuff was popping up in the off season, but I don't think I'm going to move him down that much, because how long could the punishment possibly be? Like, I don't think we're talking about anything really, really long. If it comes down, it'll probably come down early in the season, and, you know, not to just dismiss it, but that time in the fantasy calendar doesn't quite matter as much as later in the year, right? That was the reason why when Rashee Rice had a suspension last year, we were still willing to draft him because we knew the upside, and obviously Puka has an even higher ceiling there. We don't know much about this injury, so we'll keep an eye on that and we'll see what updates come out there. But I agree with you that this Rams situation, because it's such a condensed offense, that if you start pulling just like one guy out of that mix, and I've been worried about Devontae Adams with his age and with the Rams kind of showing some interest in the offseason and some other receivers, I've been worried about him potentially maybe not giving them as much as they got from him last year. Puka, of course, we know Stafford and the injury situations with him and his age. So I'm totally on board with the idea that I could see this thing in LA fall apart quick, but we also know they're the kind of organization that would just use all their picks in order to restock the shelves if they had to in any way possible. So I think the offense will continue to be all right. I'm not bumping down Puka too much right now, but it's one we're going to have to monitor here.
Yeah, Adams is a guy I bumped down five overall spots between last week and this week. Just kind of liking some of the younger players, guys that are maybe in spots where, like DJ Moore, who could be the number one receiver in Buffalo as opposed to Adams as the number two in Los Angeles. I'm like kind of breaking ties in favor of some of those guys right now in his tier. And yeah, it just all feels very fragile. And we know what it looks like when it goes well. We just got an example of that, but certainly something to monitor. No one likes the, hey, I took my first round pick in fantasy football and then week one, especially season opener, he's just not there. He's not playing. So I get if some people are just going to take one of the other great receivers, or, you know, a Jonathan Taylor type. Is Taylor you're the guy you have ranked ahead of Puka right now? Or
I have JSN ahead of him. I've had Puka as my third receiver there. And yeah, Taylor and CMC right behind, though CMC has his own concerns, obviously, which we might get to in a little bit here. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't feel great. But then you do think back to last season when we had the Stafford uncertainty around his injury and we were bumping Puka down. We were bumping some of these Rams players down. And in the long run, that looked quite foolish. So just remember that. It's obviously a different situation where he's going in drafts this year. You have to pay up a little bit more. And like you're saying, you don't want to take a guy in the first half of the first round, and now he's not available to you early in the season, but don't bump him down too much. That's at least how I'm approaching it. And perhaps I'm, you know, feeling that way because of what we did last year, pushing him into the second round and then seeing him just go out and have a monster fantasy season. But I want more information before I'm actually going to push him way down in the first round or even later.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, he could walk into being the number one scoring player in fantasy, certainly at his position this year. That is always possible for a player like this in this ecosystem, if everything remains right and tight there. All right, let's get into the running back preview. Overall state of the running back position, Boone, I think it's so fascinating this year. And for me, I've kind of got a clear vision here, but I'm curious for you. How are you attacking running back this year?
Well, I'm going after it pretty early if I can. And sometimes that depends on where you're picking and the values that come to you, because I often say that. And then, you know, you get on the clock and you look at who's available in the late second into the third and so on. And maybe you don't love the running back value there and you end up going in a different direction. But in general, I'm definitely trying to get two running backs in the first five rounds. I think after that, there is just a massive drop off in terms of the red flags that some of the guys have. I don't feel confident in really anyone from that sixth round on becoming like a quality RB2, starting that way, you know, in fantasy early in the season and giving you that value. There's some guys that could emerge and step up and become that kind of thing, but you just don't feel super confident that they're going to be that right away. So I think that's an important thing to take right away, is if you want to go robust RB, you can, you know, if you want to take three running backs in the first four rounds, something like that, totally viable strategy. You're putting your opponents on their heels. You're making them try to figure out other solutions at running back as you're taking three of those top guys. But at least having two in the first five rounds is just so important. And I love my builds much, much better when I do that.
Man, I don't know. I might take it a little step farther and say I kind of want two in the first four rounds for me. And I mean, I still really like the wide receivers available, especially because I really like the wide receivers available in rounds four and five. So being able to just get one wide receiver in rounds one to four, or shoot, you know, again, you get running back, wide receiver, running back, wide receiver, I think is actually a really nice build this year, because that fourth round is pretty well stocked with wideouts, because there are decent picks in the fifth round that I do like this year, and we will talk about some of those guys. But for me, you get into that sixth round range, you know, you're starting to look at Travion Henderson, you're starting to look at Jadarian Price, Jalen Warren. Like it gets to Jalen Warren, Chuba Hubbard, Tony Pollard o'clock pretty early in kind of the sixth round. And I have just built some, you know, robust wide receiver teams or hero RB teams where I've got one star running back and then kind of a stocked receiver room. And maybe I took a, you know, vanity tight end at some point. I do not like those teams. They can work out, of course, if I'm playing the waiver wire aggressively and all that, I'm being, you know, kind of the hawk, the wolf on the waiver wire as opposed to the sheep. That's great. We know it can happen, but man, there's just, it's tough. I don't like those teams very much. So when I'm looking at our consensus running back rankings here for this year on Yahoo, it's number one, Jahmyr Gibbs, number two, Bijan Robinson, three, Christian McCaffrey, four, Jonathan Taylor, James Cook, Saquon Barkley, Kenneth Walker, Ashton Jeanty, Chase Brown, Amarian Hampton, Devon Achane, Derrick Henry. Some really appealing names here for this one. So yeah, I think, Boone, we are kind of on the same page here. We want you guys to double tap this position, if not in the first five rounds, definitely in the first four rounds.
And part of the reason why robust RB is so viable this year is just we love the depth everywhere else. And I'm sure you're going to talk about this on all the position preview episodes is, yeah, the receivers, like you talked about, great options. You can go even late where there's some guys that you can get, Rashid Shaheed and players, you know, the double digit rounds that would not shock me if they gave you wide receiver three flex value this year. On top of the fact that you can get some really good tight ends in the mid to late rounds, quarterback, we know you can wait until like the final round and get some good guys. We just did a mock draft recently and there were guys like Brock Purdy and others going, you know, outside of the top 120 picks. Now, when you have people who, you know, work for a fantasy site, who are analysts in those drafts, you tend to see the quarterbacks last a little longer, but still, I've been in others where we see the quarterbacks last very long, and part of it is just the depth of the position this year. So I think that's important. I've also talked about this, the idea that you shouldn't be afraid to go after some of these ambiguous backfields out there. And I know we talk mm-hmm. about that every year, trying to find value in those, but there's a few this year, and you know, I could spoil it and say that the Vikings who we just talked about are one where all the backs from the backfield are going outside of, you know, the top 90 or the top 100 picks. And I think you shouldn't be afraid to grab even a couple of those guys and just take two shots at a backfield that might have three guys who have a chance to emerge as the best fantasy option and give yourself the best chance to get the exact pick from that backfield who you can start each week. It doesn't always work out, but when you get to that range in drafts, there's no risk involved whatsoever, right? And I will also add, you know, stocking up on those late round flyer running backs. I'm spending those late round picks normally on running backs. And, you know, this year, like we said, even if you do go early at running back, get your starters, maybe get your flex option, address the other positions in the middle rounds. And then when you get to the late rounds, you backfill and then you play the waiver wire aggressively and you try to get other running backs that way. But that, to me, this year has definitely been the best build.
Yeah, totally agree, especially about the ambiguous backfields. It's really where you want to be shopping when you get into these late rounds. So right now, too, I mean, August 11th, how much stock do you put into kind of the depth chart listings or some of the camp reports from some of these ambiguous backfields? Because there are some where, yeah, I mean, whatever, like take a Commander's back because both these guys are going late. But you know, we'll talk about backs like Jacksonville where both guys are listed as co-starters or things like that. Like, I think I know your answer, but just for the people watching and listening, how do you kind of approach this time of year with that stuff?
Zero stock in it. It doesn't matter. Don't even look at it. Don't let it sway your opinion at all, because there's other factors. You have to think of it case by case, but you have to think of the other context, right? Coaches are trying to keep all these players interested, involved, excited, trying hard. They don't want to just dismiss a guy right away. Hey, you know, Chris Rodriguez Jr. just came to our team. Great. Get in the backup jobs. You're going to be on the sidelines. You're not getting many touches this year. They're not going to do that. Now, I think he's going to have a role in that backfield. I just use him because he's top of mind and he just mentioned him there. But I think we have to give context to these things. Like if rookies, for example, you know, Tyler Allgeier is getting the most first team reps in the Cardinals backfield. Well, yeah, some coaches want to make rookies earn it. And all of a sudden, as things move along a week or two, Jeremiah Love ends up being that guy. Like those things just happen. So don't be worried about that. Also, I look at a guy like Cam Scataboo. We see him sharing quite a bit. Is he sharing more because that's how the backfield is going to look this year? Or is he sharing more because he's coming off a really serious injury and there's no reason to max him out in the beginning part of training camp? Let's lighten the load a little bit and ramp him up and make sure that he's ready for week one. So those things we don't know the answers to for sure. I have my feelings on each situation. We'll talk about some of them as we go, but that's the reason why I'm not putting much stock in these. I'm just trying to approach it individually and figure out what other context is involved that might be making them list guys in a certain order or co-starters or all that sort of stuff.
People forget every year around this time, what they're doing right now is a little thing called practice. And in practice, you try different things and you see what works. So it is still very early. We have an alarmingly long way to go until it's week one and they've really figured out how these teams are going to approach things. We are going to, for now, take our first quick break. We come back, we're going to talk through where the running back cliff begins this year. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we are back. Let's talk top 12 running backs and kind of compare your rankings, Boone, to the current consensus rankings on Yahoo. So again, your top 12 goes Jahmyr Gibbs, Bijan Robinson, Jonathan Taylor, Christian McCaffrey. You've got those flipped relative to consensus. James Cook, running back 5, Ashton Jeanty, Chase Brown, Amarian Hampton, Devon Achane, Saquon Barkley, Kenneth Walker, Jeremiah Love. So the three guys you're kind of lower on versus all the rest of us here at Yahoo is one Walker, Barkley, and Christian McCaffrey. So I'm just going to throw all that at you. You take it where you want to go here with these top 12 backs. You know, give me someone to highlight here.
Well, I've said this to you before. I don't normally waste too much time on the guys at the very top because you usually are getting a really good player regardless. So you can split hairs about which guy you want to take, but like Jahmyr Gibbs or Bijan Robinson, they're both awesome. Yeah. If you want to rank them in a different order, all the power to you, right? If you want to look at why I have Taylor ahead of CMC, it's the obvious stuff, right? It's the age for CMC. Yeah. It's the touches and the combination of those two things. Like we've seen guys in the past have these huge workloads and still have pretty good seasons. None of them have done it when they've been over 30. The guys who have done it and had pretty good years the next year, have been like guys who are 25 and under. So McCaffrey is in uncharted territory here. We'll see if he can come through, but 450 touches when you count the playoffs last season, man, that is just so much. And then you go back to what this offense looked like for the Colts last year and how good Jonathan Taylor was. And when we had a healthy Daniel Jones out there, and I don't know if we'll have a completely back to form Daniel Jones versus what we saw early last season. There's also going to be some touchdown regression coming for JT for sure. But when we look at when Daniel Jones was out there last year, we had Jonathan Taylor as the RB1 overall, averaging 22.4 fantasy points per game in half PPR over the first 14 weeks of the season, Harmon. So he was doing it. He was scoring touchdowns galore. He's having like those three touchdown weeks. It was great to have him on your fantasy team. Lots of things have, of course, changed with the Colts. There's injuries, there's receivers out the door. So we have to add that in there. But to me, I feel better investing in him than taking the chance that McCaffrey is going to beat all odds and come on this year and still have a really huge season after what we saw from him last year was, like, I think a little bit of decline because he got through with the incredible volume that he was getting. But if you don't look at that volume, if you start to question whether he's going to get the same volume, whether he's going to stay healthy, all those things, it just makes me scared to draft him in round one. So I normally shy away from him, and that's why JT has moved above him.
I've still got Christian McCaffrey in the same tier as Gibbs and Bijan. I have him as my fifth overall player. You know, and you got to acknowledge the risks. Like, the risks is he loses you your fantasy season. Not really. You can still survive even if your first round pick gets hurt. But, you know, he puts a real damper on your fantasy season. How about that? The upside, though, still remains that he just is the best player in fantasy football, you know? So I'm okay with that. That's kind of like a personal risk reward versus kind of just thing there. To me, there's not a big debate on that one. I really love JT. He's the top of tier two for me. I think one of the interesting ones, we can pull up the overall kind of consensus board again from all of us here at Yahoo. I think one of the bigger disagreements just kind of in the group right now is Saquon Barkley versus like a guy like Ashton Jeanty, where Jeanty's a little, there's kind of actually a folks who are lower on Jeanty are higher on Barkley. If I'm just looking at it here, like I've got him six, Scott's got him six, Hayden has Saquon sixth, Josh has him fourth at the running back position. You and Joel Smith are 10. Whereas the kind of the inverse there, you guys are maybe a little higher on Jeanty. I have Jeanty as my RB7, so not any big problem there. But thought process, like, what's the risk? Is this still just, again, you're skewing into youth here at the running back position?
This is one of those ones. I don't want to throw cold water on this. I'm sure we want to, you know, blow this up that, oh my God, we all disagree. But this range of backs, I pretty much like all of these guys. The fact that I'm a little lower on Barkley and Walker, to be honest, I want to move them up to make sure that people who follow me are getting some shares of them, because I also have found that in drafts, I'm not getting them as often because I always go with Chase Brown, who ends up being the guy available to me at the top of the second, sometimes falls to the middle of the second as well. If you want me to make the case, I could, that, you know, Barkley, they're talking about Tank Bigsby getting involved.
Don't make the case
more,
if you don't want to. I mean, shoot, if you don't believe it, don't.
I really don't. I think, and this, we could tie it into what we were saying about Justin Jefferson earlier. I would feel better moving Jefferson behind this whole pack than I would talking negatively about Barkley and Walker. Barkley and Walker are going to have good seasons. I think Achane is being beat up on because the state of that Dolphins offense, which I don't know if it's going to be that bad that it's going to just decimate any value that he could possibly have. I think he's going to get a ton of volume still. And I think people are probably underrating his ceiling. So I really like all these guys. Hampton, we've talked about on the show a million times. Just investing in that Chargers offense is very smart for fantasy this year. Yes, he could share a little bit with Keaton Mitchell. He could share a little bit with Kamani Vidal. But he is the first round pick. He is the star. And when you hear Mike McDaniel talk about this backfield, it's normally suggesting that Hampton is the guy, that they feel really good about Hampton. And then he pumps up the other two, and then everyone aggregates those quotes about, oh my God, it's going to be a three-way committee. Keaton Mitchell's never had a massive workload. He is that, like, sprinkle, that dynamic, explosive guy. He's not going to eat in significantly to Hampton. Chase Brown, I mean, he's the most underrated player in these first two rounds. Wouldn't shock me at all if he ends up being the guy who's a top five, top three back, because last season, that's what we saw from him once we got decent quarterback play in the Bengals offense, right? In the early part of the year when Joe Burrow was hurt, when the schedule was tough, he struggled a little bit. Once Joe Flacco was out there, which isn't that high of a bar, and then especially once Burrow got back, the rest of the season from week six on, we saw Chase Brown put up top five stats. He could certainly do that again. And all the talk right now coming out of Cincinnati is that he's one of the focal points of that offense. So he is going to get a ton of work. It all just boils down, Harmon, to me loving the running backs in that range. That early part of round two into the middle part of round two, I want to take all these guys. I'll take whoever falls to me. I'm really, really happy to have them on my roster. And that's why, you know, we're often starting either running back, or wide receiver, running back.
Yeah, it is tough because there are some guys, you know, in that second round range at the wide receiver position that I also really like. And if you're trying to be disciplined about it, breaking ties in favor of, I've started to move guys like Devon Achane, Chase Brown, just even ahead of the Drake Londons and the Nico Collinses, like guys, I do really like those players, but you know, you're just going to hate the running. You're going to still like the wide receiver that comes back around in the third or fourth round. I think quickly you're going to start to not like as much the running backs there. So I'm with you. Like, this is just a really good range of players overall for me, you know, that I just kind of like a lot of these backs. There's no one here that is even Achane, who a lot of the folks across the industry don't seem to like. Achane, Hayden is the highest one of us on Achane. He's got him as running back seven. And just the theory of the case is, he was like an 18 point per game player last year in half PPR. How much worse does he have to get to really be a bust, even as a second round pick? I mean, we're already baking in some regression here. I think that's been priced in. So to me, there's no running back that is inside of the consensus top 15 that's a glaring problem to me. Maybe we'll talk about one of the guys as a yellow light player for you later on, but let's get into kind of where you see the cliff at this position. Like, truly, again, we talked about some of the names early on here, but where do you feel like it really drops off at running back this year?
It's kind of two major drop-offs. One occurs like around the 2-3 turn. I still like taking Kyren Williams. I still like taking Jeremiah Love. But I know some people don't feel the same about those guys. There is certainly a drop off after those players in my mind. So that's one area. If you want to talk about like the absolute, like it gets to just a very scary scenario, if you're having to take these guys to be your RB2 in your lineup, that occurs like around the fifth to the sixth round. There's been times when guys will fall to the sixth. You can get them. We talked about it recently. I took Bucky Irving in a mock draft, who was a player I didn't really like, but he fell to me in the sixth. To get him as my RB2 in the sixth, I was willing to do that. Sometimes you see that happen, but overall, after the fifth round, you are lucky if you're getting a running back that you feel good about putting in your starting lineup this year. That is, to me, the like drop dead part of the draft, where if you don't have two backs by that point, you are scrambling, you are playing catch up, and your roster is not going to look as good because of it.
Yeah, and I've found kind of similar when you get to that fifth round range and you're trying to take a, Quinshon Judkins, right, is my running back too. I'm usually having to like go against my overall rankings, which, you know, is fine. You don't have to stick to rankings all the time, but I'm going to go against those to kind of artificially prop up a running back when there's so many players at other positions that I just like better than Quinshon Judkins at that standpoint. Again, just to use one name, David Montgomery, running back 22 in our consensus rankings, is absolutely the same vibe. There's a few guys I have warmed up to. You know, you mentioned Bucky Irving. I kind of want to take Bucky out of the coping corner, dude. I think we might have I think we might have overthought that one a little bit after the Kenny Gainwell signing. We'll talk Bucky Irving a little bit later in the show. I don't think Boone is convinced on that one, but yeah, to me, Boone, it does feel like the fifth and sixth round range is where you really start to feel the cliff. And again, it just comes back to what we're saying over and over again: grab yourself a couple of these guys early.
I agree with you, though, getting receivers in that range of the draft where the Quinshon Judkins and David Montgomery's go, you do feel better about it. When you have to take these guys to be part of your starting lineup, it's acceptable. It's not exciting. You don't feel like it's going to win you your league. You're just like, all right, I got a guy that I feel okay putting in my RB2 spot, right? Versus some of the receivers in this range could potentially actually be these, like, you know, league winning or week winning types for you. So that is just a type of, you know, roster construction that you have to consider. You can still win by going about it this way and getting these guys. And like I said, sometimes I put myself in a spot where I end up taking these guys when I never expected to. I've gone into drafts where I'm like, I'm definitely going running back early. But that's the problem sometimes with snake drafts, where you could be at the end of a round and all of the guys that you wanted there aren't available. And now you don't feel that good about who you have to take, and you're not going to continue just to go down the same plan and the same path that you had if you don't like the players and the value available in that area. So I recommend that people come away. I'm with you. In the first couple rounds, you know, in the first 3 to 4 rounds, I really like having two running backs. I'm okay starting with two in the first 2 rounds. But I think after the 5th round, if you don't have that second running back, I'm worried. I'm worried about the roster. I don't feel good. And now you are absolutely chasing, and you're going to end up taking guys ahead of ADP because you're so worried about it. And it's just going to hurt your team overall. It's going to hurt your chances of winning a title.
So let's get into some of your green light players at ADP right now, because, and these are guys outside the top 12 that we've already talked about here. I want to hit on some of these players because I think they sort of start to represent to me when you're getting into the cliff zone. Your first two guys are Kyren Williams and Breece Hall. Kyren Williams is, and there's a couple of running backs we'll talk about today where I didn't realize, like, I was lower than consensus on Kyren Williams. And yet I am kind of, from an overall perspective, a little bit lower on him, which I think just starts, he represents where I think I'm starting to get more into the receivers and the running back. So while I recognize that there's just some fragility with the ecosystem overall, as we talked about, and I do think Blake Corum is probably going to eat into his touches a little bit more on an annual basis. Like every single year, I think he'll get more involved, not like totally fading him, but Breece Hall, make the case for Breece Hall, who is a guy for me, is my 14th running back on the board.
We could talk about Breece, but I have to address the Kyren thing first. I think Kyren is the guy who gets undervalued all the time. I don't understand it. I think what it is, Harmon, is everyone wants to get like the new, exciting young player, and they view this backfield as Kyren being the older guy and Corum being like the young, exciting guy who's going to usurp him.
Yeah.
And that's not the case at all. They're the exact same age. The difference is just a couple of months. They're both 26. I think one guy's birthday is in August and one guy's birthday is in November. So this is not a scenario where it's like a new, young, exciting back coming for the starting role. And how many years in a row are we going to do this? It feels like it's been the last couple of seasons where everyone's just checking their watch, waiting for Kyren Williams to give up this job. But what's happened? The last 3 seasons, he's been a top 10 fantasy back on a per game basis. Like, this dude is legit. He's very good. All the caveats that we said earlier about the Rams offense being a house of cards, and if you pull Stafford or Puka or one of these guys out, they are not going to have the same scoring power. They are not going to be as valuable in terms of what the running back's giving them. But this scheme produces very strong fantasy value, and Kyren Williams is the guy that they trust. So anytime you see Kyren Williams catching punts, or, you know, Blake Corum's coming for the job, buy the dip every single time. I think Kyren is totally undervalued. I agree with you that the receivers in that range, the early 3rd round into the mid 3rd round, great wideouts. I love grabbing those guys too. But Kyren Williams is somebody that people should feel much better about. I think he's going to have another good season, and it wouldn't shock me at all if he's a top 12 back again, maybe even top 10. So that, I had to say that. I had to throw that out there. Yeah. I'm not throwing cold water on Kyren. He's a really good fantasy asset.
Yeah, I'm his running back 16. So I'm just a couple of spots behind positional ADP. But I'm just like, from an overall ADP perspective, I'm a little bit lower on him, but that just mostly has to do with the overall, like, players at other positions. So I'm not like totally out on Williams, but just breaking ties in favor there with some of the fragility of the ecosystem. But yeah, Breece Hall is a guy I think makes a lot of sense in sort of a similar way, where I think this is one where I'm buying the opposite of what they were selling last year, where, oh yeah, we're going to try to get Braylon Allen involved. We're going to try to get Isaiah. Now, I think this year it's pretty much just mostly going to be the Breece Hall show. They paid him. He had a pretty solid season last year. Obviously, you can't talk about the Jets without the Frank Reich specter being a big thing. But yeah, he is one that I'm definitely green light on at ADP as well. Him and one of the other backs we're going to talk about here before the break are the two guys in these like 30s and 40s that I actually really, really like, Breece Hall being one of them.
Yeah, I'm excited about what we're hearing out of New York for him, and the fact that, yeah, he could get back to being more of a workhorse. The thing with Breeze too is that we've seen it before. We've seen that top 10 upside. I think we're pretty confident that the talent is there. It's sort of like Garrett Wilson, where he's a player that could certainly be a top 12 fantasy running back. Garrett Wilson could be a top 12 fantasy receiver. And yet this Jets offense is the thing that's held them back and made them more of these RB2 wide receiver two types for fantasy. But we saw like very, very high end production from him over stretches in the past, right? He overcame the knee injury, overcame subpar quarterback play, produced RB6 fantasy results on a per game basis in 2023. Like, he could be that guy again. It is not impossible. If the Jets can take a step, if they get stable quarterback play from Geno, there's a lot of caveats on this one too, Harmon. Like, it is not, that's why I'm saying this is where we start to kind of have another cliff, because I feel a lot better about those guys in the second round versus taking Breece Hall. But there is a path for him to produce, wildly outproduce this spot. And I have found myself taking him in the third round this year. Again, trying to make sure that I get that strong second running back, because I feel good about what I can still do at receiver in the fourth round and beyond.
Yeah, Breece is a guy I've broken ties in favor of ahead of Kyren for a lot of the reasons you mentioned there. Same with Javonte Williams, by the way, which maybe that is just like such a boomer take. But I think the Cowboys offense is like upward trajectory, man. So I'm pretty all in on Javonte Williams in that spot. One guy you have as a green light player who I am way behind ADP on, and again, I didn't realize I was going to be, but just like comparing the two, is Cam Scataboo, dude. Sell me on Cam Scataboo at 41st overall. And I know he was good in fantasy last year, and maybe that's just what you're going to tell me. But here are the things I'm concerned about. One, the injuries. Yeah, sure, fine. One, I'm not sure the Giants are that good. And two, I'm not sure he's that good. That makes me really nervous when I've got both of those factors involved and we're taking him 41st overall. I have him, and again, some of this is structural stuff just because I like the receivers, whatever. Again, he's the 41st overall pick. I have him as like my 57th overall player. So to me, I think, I don't know. Nobody clip this. If this gets clipped, I'm going to be mad. Nobody clip this. But I kind of just think he's a meme player, honestly. I think if he wasn't such an interesting character, I think he goes like 50th overall, not 41st overall. And maybe I'm stupid for that, but sell me on Cam Scataboo.
I mean, yeah, he's one of those guys, cool name, fun personality. It's just infectious watching him out there. But the team also loves him, Harmon. Jackson Dart loves him. And I think this coaching staff wants to run the ball. They want a back that's going to be able to pound it. If we look at what happened last year, and we can write it off as it was a small sample size, you know, it was only 8 games before he got hurt. He was really good in fantasy, but I think it's also worth noting that when he was out there with Tyron Tracy Jr., he was getting like 3/4 of the work versus Tyron Tracy Jr. This was not a scenario where Tyron Tracy Jr. had turned this into an even split or anything even close. That's why I'm kind of just not agreeing with some of the reports that are coming out right now that are saying, oh, these guys are splitting and this is how it's going to be. I want to see where we are a month from now when the season comes around and Scataboo's even healthier and things actually matter. Are you going to have this be a committee backfield, or are you going to have the guy out there who was producing at a very high clip last season? If we look at just the final 6 healthy appearances, he had the 7th most fantasy points among running backs, was averaging 17.4 fantasy points per game in half PPR. And over the final 4 starts, and again, we're getting even smaller sample size here, that's fine, 22 touches per game. So different coaching staff for sure. I mean, Harbaugh's an old school guy, I would think. Like, I think they're going to still run the ball here. I think they really like Scataboo. The team likes Scataboo. They feed off that energy. And I believe this offense needs him. I don't think Tyron Tracy Jr. is the answer there. I certainly don't think Devin Singletary is going to be the guy. Might get a couple touches a game, but that's about it. So of this next phase of backs after, you know, the top 14, 15 guys, Scataboo is someone that I can at least see the ceiling for. And I feel the same way about Quinshon Judkins, where both these guys are coming off injuries. Both these guys really showed it over short stretches last season that they had this massive upside. I'm willing to invest because both of them seem extremely healthy right now, like they're going to be okay this year. So I'm taking the injury discount.
Yeah, I have Scataboo running back 22 and Quinshon Judkins running back 23. Again, this is just a case where the market, like our ADP is higher on Scataboo than I am, because I agree that there's actually a pretty similar case between these two guys. The only kind of like the variable going in Judkins' favor is that I'm very confident, like he is a good starting back. But the other thing that goes against Judkins is that I think Dylan Sampson might play a role as a pass catcher, where I'm not 100% sure if Quinshon Judkins does. Whereas in the inverse, like if Tyron Tracy Jr. was a better running back, I would think that maybe Cam Scataboo would get pushed for the starting job. As it stands, Tyron Tracy is just Tyron Tracy. So I do think Scataboo is the clear starter on a run heavy offense, which is why ultimately I've broken ties in favor of Scataboo over Judkins. But because of ADP, like I end up with Judkins a lot more than I do necessarily with Cam Scataboo. But so he's a green light player for me. Last one, a green light guy that we do agree on before we go to break here is DeAndre Swift. Swift is the 48th overall player. I'm a few spots higher than that. I have as my running back 17. He's the running back 20 off the board. He's the guy, Boone, that is just like ultra disrespected. Nobody likes DeAndre Swift. Everybody wants him to go away. And yet Ben Johnson, who remember the narrative last year was, oh, he moved away from Swift before. All he does is talk about how great DeAndre Swift is. By the way, this is a little side note. This is kind of a thing I see on Twitter. It's like, Ben Johnson never praises his players. I'm like, I can find clips of him praising all of his players. He's like, yeah. Give me a break. But yeah, anyways, he's talked about how good DeAndre Swift is and how steady of a presence he is. I think Swift is a very overthought player in fantasy right now.
The RB14 in fantasy points per game last season, over 1,300 scrimmage yards, 10 touchdowns. And if people are worried about Kyle Manungai being there, his numbers actually got better after Manungai became a bigger part of the offense. From week 6 on, Swift was the RB10 in fantasy points per game. So there's going to be a lot to go around in this offense. And yeah, I don't really understand why people are down on Swift. They just think he's going to move along. It's kind of the Kyren Williams thing, right? People don't really like him. They think he's going to get overtaken by a younger back. And I don't think it's going to happen this year. At some point, maybe they'll draft somebody or sign somebody. But this season, I was surprised that they came back with this duo. But because they did, you're going to want to invest in this backfield. You're going to want to do it with DeAndre Swift.
Yeah, Swift at running back 17. For me, that's the answer where that's the last click that I feel, all right, I like it. That's the last click that I can feel pretty confident about. There's still some backs I like later, but it just gets a little bit dicier. However, we are going to take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of those backs that are a little dicier, but we still like. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. Let's talk through some more green light players. We got four more here from you, Boone, to hit on. You got David Montgomery, Bashaul Tutin, Jadarian Price, and Ramondre Stevenson. It's good to see that you're finally on the right side of history with the Patriots back.
Took a while. It took a while.
I'm going to throw those four names.
I was dragging my feet for as long as I could.
Yeah, I get it. Hanging on. The young player. Honestly, Trayvon Henderson's fine. He's a whatever pick. It's fine. But those four guys, just give me one of them that you really want to stand up here and make the case for.
I mean, right now, David Montgomery seems like a very solid pick to me. And we could lump him into this like group of like older backs that people just don't see as these sexy fantasy options. But he goes to the Texans, who absolutely needed someone. They saw Woody Marks in that lead back role last year. They didn't like what they saw because they decided to go out and get a veteran who could come in and be the dude. And we saw this happen a couple years ago for them when they went out and got Joe Mixon. And he was a little bit older and people weren't as excited about him. And what happened? He ended up being a very solid RB1 that year, had a huge season for them. I think there's a good shot that we might not see that. I think Mixon was like RB5 in fantasy points per game that year. I don't think we're going to see that. But I think we're going to see something where David Montgomery is a very solid RB2 and wouldn't shock me at all if he's pushing for a spot in the top 15 or even the top 12, Harmon, because this Texans team is very solid. They've made improvements this year. They have good weapons in the passing game. Strong chance that we're going to see better things from CJ Stroud this year. So, man, just putting that veteran back out there with Woody Marks as the complimentary piece, as a pass-catching option. I don't buy the Woody Marks is going to take over half this backfield unless we've seen massive changes from the Woody Marks that we saw last season. He did not look like somebody that was a threat to be the real lead back on a quality team, which I think this is. And Montgomery's someone who's done it before, who still has something left in the tank. A guy that I don't think people should overlook for fantasy.
Yeah, he's one I'm glad you brought him up, because it feels like there's really strong opinions on David Montgomery. Like, there are some people that really like him and think he's a big time value. And there are some people I talked to that just, they're totally out on Montgomery with the Houston Texans. And I'm kind of a Montgomery centrist, honestly. I don't really have a strong take one way or another. I find it odd that he's become this kind of lightning rod fantasy football player, because the barrier, if I was to make the positive case, the barrier for entry for being a good Texans back is so, so low. This is this team ranks 31st in rushing success rate since CJ Stroud entered the league in 2023. 31st. And that was even with those Joe Mixon years. You know, they've never been a good, consistent rushing attack. And Montgomery, you know, I don't think is totally cooked. It bothers me a little bit that the Lions basically just completely shelved him and were totally willing to let him go. Bothers me a little bit, but not enough to really get too concerned. And the other thing, I think people are really just overstating how bad this offensive environment is, Boone. I mean, CJ Stroud is a top 10 quarterback by EPA per play last year. This was the 17th best passing game in dropback success rate and EPA last year. This is not some disgusting, hideous environment. And I think there's a lot of ways that it can be even better this year, as you outlined. Like, the offensive line, I think, if this is the 24th best offensive line in the NFL, that's an improvement. Jaden Higgins in year two, Tank Dell may be coming back healthy, Jalen Knoll in his second season. I think there's, if I'm just drafting off of environment, I think this is an underrated environment.
Yeah, and the defense is going to be a huge impact on all of this. I think they want to win games by running the ball and playing strong defense, and I think they're going to be able to this year. Why not? Like, yeah, that part of it I don't understand. And Texans, maybe they're just not a sexy team. Like, I know that's a funny word to use when we're talking about fantasy, but it really seems that way. Oh. Where they're not getting hyped up, and yet they have all of these players, all of this talent collected. If the Texans went to the Super Bowl this year, would it shock you, Harmon?
No, not at all. I think they're going to, I think they should be one of the favorites.
Yeah, like last year, that defense was, I'm worried as a Bills fan, they have to play them in week one. I can't wait to see where I end up ranking Josh Allen in week one, right? He's not going to have a strong game against that Texans defense. And that's where it starts. So I think there are going to be a lot of positive game scripts, and David Montgomery is going to be the guy that they want out there, not the pass catching option in Woody Marks.
Yeah. Could you see him just falling backwards into 10 touchdowns? I could totally see that for a run heavy game script with a really quality defense on the other side. Another player who's kind of a lightning rod in the Twitter streets that I am definitely in on with you this year is Bashaul Tuten. Because to me, he just, when we're talking about these guys, Boone, that are, you know, the second year running backs, the Quinjon Judkins and the Cam Scadaboos, and we'll see what this the Jags is. They're going to be good. Their offense is going to be good. So I kind of like getting the running back attached to it, but make the case here for Bashaul Tuten with Chris Rodriguez and him being listed as co-starters on the coveted preseason depth chart.
Chris Rodriguez is not a lead back in the NFL. Like, he's just not. He gives you very little in the passing game. And how did you, many teams
but,
out there?
Boone, but did you know that Liam Cohen was his college coach? Did you know that?
And did you know, Harmon, that he's back at practice and they're splitting reps? Yeah. Well, again,
yeah.
It's very early in training camp and teams are going to split a bunch of reps. But who profiles as the guy that can be that explosive option, can be the lead back, can do a little bit of everything? It's Bashaul Tuten. And there are plenty of Liam Cohen quotes going back to OTAs where he's talking up his improvement year over year and how excited they are for him this season. Rodriguez is a back that you bring in to take some of the load off of him as that bigger bodied option. Yes, could he factor in at the goal line? For sure. But who else factored into the goal line? Bashaul Tuten, when he scored 7 touchdowns as a rookie, as the number 2 back in this offense last year. And we could see Rodriguez have a role like Tuten had last season, where he gets something around, 100 touches, something like that. Still has an okay role, not one that's overly exciting for fantasy. Maybe a TD or bust kind of flex option for you. Not somebody that I'm going to want to draft or start. Tuten's a guy that they want out there that can make a difference, that can break these big plays. And then LaQuint Allen Jr., I feel bad for, because he's like the forgotten man in all of this. And in part, it's because he doesn't have much of a fantasy ceiling. He will get some receiving work out there. He'll also factor in. But it's not going to be enough that we need to worry about him for fantasy. And it's not going to be enough that it's going to take away from Tootin's upside. So will this be some sort of committee? Yes. Is Tootin going to have 50% plus of the snaps? Yes. And if he does that, he is going to be just fine, and he is going to be a solid fantasy asset for you.
Yeah, that's why he's a fifth round pick. If he was going to own the goal line role and the LaQuint Allen, obviously is going to have his like third down role, everything like that. That doesn't mean that Bashel Tootin is never going to score a touchdown and never going to catch a pass just because of those two guys in those roles. He just might be kind of a frustrating, you know, running back to flex where it's a little bit like you need him to hit big plays. Luckily, this is a guy that can hit big plays and is in a good offensive environment. So yeah, when I get into that spot that I don't want to be in, right, or that I don't want to be in, where I need a running back two when I get to the fifth round, I prefer to have that spot locked up. Tootin's one of the guys that I really want to look at there, because I just, again, I'm breaking ties in favor of, like, the Browns aren't going to be good. The Giants, I don't think, are going to be very good. I do think the Jags are going to be good. So give me the running back who's going to be attached to that situation. Before we move on here, another guy that, you know, you have as a green light player is Jadarian Price. Another player, Boone, I don't have a strong take on one way or another. So I think the case for Jadarian Price is pretty obvious, but make it anyways.
First round back in a good offense, and the fact that we are inflating George Helani and Emmanuel Wilson as guys that are going to impede a first round back, and somebody who's gotten a ton of positive comments from the coaching staff, that the beat writers have remarked that he's looked really good out there. This is a player that's, the fact that he's this far down is shocking to me. So yes, I'm absolutely willing to take him as my RB2. Now, when Zach Charbonnet comes back later in the season off of a serious injury that occurred this year, maybe that will change things a little bit, but they drafted Price to be the guy, and I think he is going to emerge as the guy, especially this season. Next year, we'll reevaluate. Zach Charbonnet might not be there anymore. That's a whole different story, but later this season, when Charbonnet comes back, he's not going to be the same player that he was before. So Price is the guy to invest in this backfield.
Well, I'll always have August 11th, you know, 5 p.m. Eastern, where my dynasty teams can remember that George Helani was listed as the running back one of the preseason depth charts. So how dare you disparage the great George Helani? But no, yeah, I'm with you that Jadarian Price is fine. Like, I kind of have him as he's running back 26 in ADP. I have him as my running back 26. So I'm in line with where he goes there as well. We are going to take another quick break. We come back, we talk through the red light and yellow light players. We will get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We're talking through the red and yellow light players at the running back position. Before we do, just wanted to clarify what a yellow light means, because I got a couple of responses from listeners that were confused about how I was discussing what a yellow light player was. And by the way, I'm totally ripping off like a Scott Pianowski-ism here, so maybe I'm speaking out of term, but I think the reason the confusion is, this is my theory, Boone, is that because we as human beings, I won't speak for Canadians. You guys are nicer than us here in the United States. Here in the United States, when we see a yellow light, that means get through that thing before it turns red. What the yellow light is actually supposed to mean is you approach with caution, slow down, because this thing's about to turn red. And when I see we're talking about these yellow light players, that means we're not out. We're just kind of approaching with some caution here. But the red light, that's stop. Okay, don't draft. Stop. Don't be drafting these guys. So does that make sense with how you categorize the red and yellow light? And hopefully for the listeners out there, that makes a little bit more sense too.
I feel like every time we talk about our Canadian American differences, I always point out that I think the two countries and the people in them are a lot more similar than they are, you know, different. So
well, yes, I agree.
We're the exact same when it comes to a yellow light. We are the exact same when it comes to a yellow light, Harmon. But yeah, I think the whole idea of this is just proceed, but proceed with caution. Still drafting them, but don't feel as good as maybe I should feel about drafting them. I'm a little bit worried when I click their name.
All right. So with that, and by the way, yes, we're always much more alike than we are apart, different, you know? Okay. So Boone and I are in unity here, you know? Okay. There's that. All right. Derrick Henry. Why we got the yellow light up for Derrick Henry?
Do you feel good about picking him? Because at some point, Harmon, I know this
great,
sounds
bro.
So stupid. It sounds so stupid because I have said this, I think, for multiple seasons that we have to be worried. Like, since he turned 30, it was like he's a bigger back at some point, you know, Father Time is undefeated. It's coming. What year is it going to happen? It hasn't happened yet. Continues to defy that age curve that's out there. He's an absolute freak. He is one of one, and maybe he can do it again. But I feel like there's a chance that one of these years, Harmon, the wheels are going to fall off. He's also a back that doesn't get involved that much in the receiving game, so we can't really hope that he's going to come through that way. Can he fall into the end zone 10, 12 times? It's Derrick Henry. Absolutely. He's still going to be good for fantasy. Is he going to be RB1, top 10 good? That's the part that I'm a little worried about. I think we're going to see him maybe take a step back at some point and become more of that high-end RB2, which is how I have him ranked, a guy that's a good player to have in your lineup, but isn't necessarily going to win you your league. And I can't wait till we get to December and I'm being proven wrong once again, and the guy has 15 to 20 touchdowns and is just leading everybody to a fantasy title. And listen, I traded for him in one of my main leagues last year where I was trying to beat my buddies from high school. So I bought in. I, at some point, was like, the guy still has it. But I'm just always worried when I'm ranking and there's younger backs and there's other backs that I feel have that higher ceiling, I tend to want to push them above him.
Man, maybe if there was any signs last year that it was slowing down, I would be nervous about it, but there really wasn't. I mean, his yards after contact per rush attempt were actually higher slightly last year than the year before. The blocking was worse in Baltimore last year. I think that was a problem. I think, you know, maybe some of the scheme, it just wasn't totally working out there. But I love the way Henry fits in this offense. I have as my eighth ranked running back right now. I just don't see a reason. I don't see a reason why the train is slowing down here, man. Like, I think he's got 10 touchdowns in his back pocket entering the season. Like, that's just
going to say 10 more seasons in him. I think he's got 10 more seasons in him. He's just going to keep going.
Maybe, dude, I don't know.
This isn't a CMC-like situation, right? Where if McCaffrey's efficiency declines, he can make up for it with the volume and the passing game. Henry doesn't have that. So if we do at some point see the efficiency start to decline, he doesn't have the receiving role that can kind of counter some of that. But I agree with you. I mean, I laid it out. I am still drafting him. I'm willing to take him. I just never feel good about it. But when December comes along, I'm sure we'll all be happy when we have him on our teams.
Yeah. D. Hember is going to be happening on my team. Basically, to go back to the red light, yellow light, green light analogy here, Boone is actually he's approaching the light with some caution. He's slowing down. He's not totally stopping. And I'm just running through that thing, which, by the way, not a good idea. Okay, so maybe I'm the one who's going to end up getting banged here. The player that I is, to me, the start of the running back cliff is the next guy we're talking about in yellow light here, which is Josh Jacobs, 33rd overall ADP. Honestly, Boone, I think there's a stronger case that he's a red light player. And that's even, I think with the possibility of a suspension, he is a red light player to me. But I think there's a lot of reasons to be kind of worried about Josh Jacobs, even without the suspension risk. Where are you at with the Green Bay running back?
Yeah, there's an injury situation with him as well that we're monitoring. So there's a few things. He is getting up there in terms of age. But when he's been on the field recently, he has been good. Now, the one complicating factor that we have to add in this year is Marshawn Lloyd. Can Marshawn Lloyd actually stay healthy?
Oh,
because
baby.
At the moment, he's healthy, and we are getting a lot of steam about him coming out of camp, that he looks great, that he's explosive, that he's going to have a role in this backfield this year. Now, putting your chips on Marshawn Lloyd, who's like going down the J.K. Dobbins path for like getting hurt every single year and not being able to finish a season, I don't know
he
if
wishes
that's where
he,
I
dude,
wanna,
he wishes
you know,
he was,
now,
he wishes he was J.K. Dobbins. He can't even finish a training camp. I mean, come on.
Yeah, he's got a long way to go, but he also comes at a much cheaper ADP. So you could take Lloyd without any sort of risk. And I think people should to spoil one of the guys that we have in the sleeper section. Lloyd is one of them, because if things go south with Josh Jacobs and if Lloyd can stay healthy, which is a massive if, but if he can stay healthy, he is the kind of player in a really good offense that could have a huge fantasy season this year. So, yeah, a lot of worry about Jacobs, but I also think it's been baked into his ADP. And with the new report today that punishment still could be coming for him, we're going to see that ADP continue to fall. So you're going to be getting Jacobs in the fourth round. Maybe we'll see him fall even later. And given the player that he's been, which is an RB1 for fantasy in recent years, it's hard not to click that guy, even if we know he's going to miss a little bit of time early in the season. when he's out there, he's still going to be good for fantasy. I don't think he's giving up this starting job this year. He might lose a little bit off the top of his projection if Lloyd can stay healthy. But in my mind, when he's out there, he's still going to be a good start for fantasy. Maybe not a league winning type, maybe not, you know, top five, top 10 like he's been before, but still fringe, you know, low end RB1, high end RB2, well within his range of outcomes, even with all the weirdness around him.
Yeah, I think the problem for me is just, I wonder if you could be kind of catching a falling knife with Josh Jacobs there. Again, maybe I'm wrong about this, but he, unlike Derrick Henry, did experience declines across the board last year. Explosive run rate went from 7.6% to 6%. Yards per carry obviously fell. Yards after contact went from 3.5 to 3.1. So not a major decline, but just ticking downward. Whereas again, I think with Henry, it wasn't quite like that. So just the environment in Green Bay, I think, could be worse as well. And he's just a guy who wore down at the end of last year. So don't want to be totally out on Jacobs, but he's a guy there I think is a little risky to click right now. And then, okay, real quick, I will do just a rapid fire on the red light players, but Trayvon Henderson, you do have him as a yellow light player. I think that's the right designation. I wouldn't call him a total red light for me, but you know why Stevenson green light, Henderson yellow light?
We did an episode before training camp started, I believe it was, where we talked about like some of the rankings that could change quite a bit over the course of the next month or so before the season starts. And we talked about Henderson, and we needed to hear good things. We needed to see good things from him. Now, the highlights are there. We're seeing him catch balls downfield. We're seeing him make some big plays. But everything we're hearing coming out of New England is that this is still Ramondre Stevenson's backfield, that Henderson is not showing well enough as a pass protector between the tackles, all the concerns that the coaching staff has put out there for him. He's not really answering the bell based on what we've heard so far. So that's led me to go, hey, Stevenson is going to start the season as the guy. It's made me less interested in Henderson and more worried that we're not going to see that transition happen where he's going to take over this backfield this year. Could it happen at any moment? Yes, because we saw it happen at one point last season when Stevenson got hurt. Henderson gets out there and he acquits himself very, very well, was a very solid fantasy start, was putting up RB1 numbers during that stretch. But I think it might take an injury to Stevenson for this to happen now, Harmon. So a lot more worried about taking him to the point where we should be considering flipping these ADPs at this point. And maybe it's shocking that I'm saying that and I am late to the game on this one. But Stevenson was solid for fantasy last year, and right now both these guys are going as sort of really low-end RB2s, high-end RB3s, and if we put Stevenson slightly ahead of Henderson, I think that's probably the right call. I still don't have it that way, but I've moved them very close to each other at this point.
Yeah, they're very close for me as well. I do think you have to – I still think you rank Henderson higher just on potential. Right. I mean, because if one guy is going to come in here and really run away with this thing, I think it will be Stevenson, but or excuse me, it will be Henderson. I have him as my 65th overall player, 71st overall for Henderson, which is I'm a little bit behind ADP on Henderson and very much ahead, about seven spots ahead on on Ramondre Stevenson. The red light guys that you've got here, Travis Achane Jr., Bucky Irving, Jaylen Warren, and Chuba Hubbard. I'm going to throw it to you this way. Which one of these guys are you most worried kind of comes back to bite you and beats you as either a red light player here that you're not going to draft very much?
Absolutely, Chuba Hubbard. And we're talking about flipping backs in a backfield. I've moved Jonathan Brooks above him in my rankings.
Again,
everything we're hearing coming out, everything we're seeing coming out of Carolina, Brooks is healthy. The coaching staff's fired up about him. He adds that extra dimension to the offense. And it's a little bit like Marshawn Lloyd-esque. Like, we need him to stay healthy. We need him to continue to prove that he can be that guy. But he's checking every single box right now, Harmon. And if you're looking for somebody to emerge from this backfield and actually be a difference maker, Brooks needed to not be doing what he's doing right now. Brooks needed to get to training camp, not look great, sluggish coming back from the injury, not regaining his form. That's not what's happening, according to beat writers, according to people around the team, according to people in the organization. He looks great. They're fired up about him and what he could potentially become. Will it be week one where he's leading this backfield? Not sure about that. But as this season goes along, are we going to see him take over kind of the way that Rico Dowdle did last year? And there was injury situations impacting that. But Brooks seems to be the player that they want to be leading this backfield. And it's really exciting. And I try not to get caught up in, like I mentioned earlier, the thing that fantasy managers and fantasy analysts do all the time, where they want to get that rising star. They want to be one of the first people that's so excited about a player. And I got him on all my teams. But man, right now, everything we're hearing out of Carolina certainly points to Brooks potentially being one of those guys. And there's two players right now that we're going very late in drafts and we're seeing their ADPs rise. And I'm trying to get as much as I can of him. One of them is Brooks. The other we're going to talk about in a little bit when we get to the sleeper section.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I like Jonathan Brooks. I've got him 15.7 spots ahead of ADP, where I'm just kind of in line with Chuba. So yeah, I've got these guys pretty close in my rankings. And I've been talking about Brooks and what they want from him pretty much since like the draft ended. It was a signal that they were excited about Brooks, the way they let Rico Dowdle walk and did not replace him with anyone.
I'm going to go the opposite way in the question you just asked me, like who could come back to bite you the most here. I don't know if you meant it in bite you the most in terms of me being wrong about them being a red light player, or if you meant bite you the most in terms of just being terrible for fantasy. But what if we go the opposite way, bite you the most in terms of who could be really good? It's Travis Achane Jr., right? It's Travis Achane, who in that Saints offense, I think could be really, really good. And I don't think it's just him and his talent. I think it's situations. And in Jacksonville, he got in a very good situation with Liam Cohen last year, and that offense took off and he was really good for fantasy. We could see the same happen in New Orleans. And at the start of the offseason, I felt a lot stronger about that. When Alvin Kamara reworked his deal, that's when I started to get worried. And it's not because Kamara is coming for the job. Kamara is a fading player for sure. But if Kamara continues to fade, continues to take a little bit of a step back, and we do see Travis Achane Jr. be the guy, man, he could be really good in this offense. We know Kellen Moore, it just runs this really fast-paced attack. We know all the weapons they have there. The offensive line is really solid. It is a good environment. It's just, man, is Kamara going to move out of the way? We thought there was a chance he was going to retire. We thought they might move on from him. If he's out there and he's this like legacy player for the Saints, I have a hard time believing that they're going to push him off the field often enough to allow someone else to be the guy. But I'm kind of hopeful. So he might be somebody that maybe should be more in like the yellow light range. But if we're picking from this group, he's the one that I could see really show up this year and have a great fantasy season.
Yeah, that was what I meant. Like, which of these guys could burn you for kind of saying they're a red light? And I think he probably does make a ton of sense to me for all the reasons that you listed there. Honestly, I think Bucky Irving might be the guy for me that I've really changed my mind on the most. I mean, you're going to keep him in the coping corner. Dude, I don't know. Hearing out of Tampa Bay Buccaneers camp that like basically Kenny Gainwell is involved as a pass catcher, but he's not really a rushing threat. And Bucky Irving is getting good reviews. He's healthier this year. That might be a top three offensive line in the league in Tampa Bay right now. I think the offensive line is generally really good. I mean, not just the offensive ecosystem is generally really good. So when I'm looking at these guys in this fifth round range, where it's, again, I'll bring this up, the Quinshon Judkins, the Cam Scadaboo, he goes in the fourth round. I don't even know if these teams are going to be good. Like, I think the Bucs are going to be pretty good. They have a good offensive line, good ecosystem. I will take a shot on Bucky Irving there, because I kind of think Kenny Gainwell's proficiency as a pass catcher has maybe gotten a touch overrated, considering he was just in the Aaron Rodgers dump off offense last year. To me, I think Bucky, not going to be what he was as a rookie necessarily, but could be better than that in year two.
I just don't see the ceiling. And that was part of the reason why we put him in the coping corner, because I just didn't see him getting back to being that top 12 guy. And you're saying he like probably won't be as good player as he was when he was a rookie. When he was a rookie, that's what he was. So I don't see that ceiling anymore. But again, like I spoke about earlier, if he falls, if you get him in the late fifth into the sixth round, that's a fine range to get him. Put him in your RB2 slot. He's not going to burn you from there, but he's just not going to have the ceiling that you necessarily want. If you want somebody with a little more upside in that role, I don't think he's the guy. I still don't believe in him, and I'm still keeping him in the coping corner, but we can discuss that the next time we pull up the panic meter.
I guess we'll discuss that in the regular season. We'll see how that goes. Okay, we are going to take our last quick break. We come back. We've got sleepers for you on the other side of this break. We'll get into that right after this. All right, these are our sleeper running backs for the year. These are the guys going outside the top 100 in Yahoo ADP right now. Number one is Jonathan Brooks, who we already talked through, and I echo Boone's thoughts there. He's someone I am ahead of consensus on. The other ones here are Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt, Jordan Mason, Jonah Coleman, Nicholas Singleton, Damon Claiborne. Shout out to Boone. Deep sicko day three running back stuff there. Jaden Blue and Marshawn Lloyd, who are kind of like the same player. So we'll save them to the end. Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt, I know we talked about him a ton. This Commander's backfield, Boone, it's like I'm in an argument with myself about it constantly. I've been just flip-flopping, like whoever I talk to last, and they're like, let me make the case for Rashad Webb. Like, okay, that's a good case. I think Rashad White could be this year's Javonte Williams. And then like you and I talk about Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt, I'm like, you know what? Younger and more explosive guy, running under center stuff. He actually had some good metrics out of under center. Maybe I'll list JCM ahead. And now there's a third brain demon in the conversation here, which is, what if none of this matters because the Commanders are going to stink because Laremy Tunsil misses the entire season? So I think regardless, 119 overall ADP on JCM is fine, and is it's a good to target this ambiguous backfield. So that is maybe the TMI of what's going on in my brain with the Commander's backfield. Can you bring some sense to this situation, Boone?
I'm surprised it's still as much of a debate as it is even Herman. Like, this is one where it's the opposite of Travion Henderson, where the coaching staff was like, we need to see X, Y, and Z from you, and we're not seeing it. With JCM, they made it very clear, like, you need to be able to step up in the passing game, and it sounds like that's what he's doing, right? We're getting really positive reports about that. We're getting tons of clips from camp where he's working in the passing game. Is it perfect? No. Is he still missing blocks sometimes? That is going to happen. Like, yeah, this is a process, and we're not quite at the season yet. And is Rashad White going to be involved in this backfield? Absolutely. He's not going away. He's not going to sit on the bench while JCM gets the vast majority of the touches. But they put out their depth chart, and Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt was the lead back. He, again, going back to everything we've said all offseason, he's the most explosive guy. He ended the year so hot last season. And he's really the player that I think is going to get the first crack at this. Can he do it? Can he hold up over the course of a full season? Those things we're not totally sure about. And that's why he's going off the board at the end of the 10th round in his ADP. I would take him much higher than that. I would take him inside the top 100 picks, but you often don't have to. So I mentioned before, there were two backs late that I really like grabbing that I think we're going to continue to see their ADPs rise over the next month. One was Jonathan Brooks. Another is Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt. He was the second guy in that list for me. And I think we're looking at two guys that are young backs, that are really exciting players, and who are going to be leading their backfields this season, even though the veterans who are there with them will still be involved. We're trying to find the guy that can transcend, who can be that fantasy star and that meaningful difference maker in your lineup. These two guys profile as that, and Brooks and JCM. So give me all the shares of Bill, especially when he's going this late. You can take Rashad White alongside him if you want to. You can grab them both, and there's zero risk involved. But I often don't. I often just take JCM, and we'll let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, I've got him 17 spots ahead of his overall ADP, so I'm pretty much right there with you on JCM. Also 17 spots ahead of ADP on Jordan Mason. I mean, Jordan Mason pretty much at 120 overall is kind of last call for, you want a starting running back? It's probably Jordan Mason at 120. So obviously it makes sense as a sleeper here. I don't know if you want to make the case for Jordan Mason, or you want to talk about one of these more exciting rookies or RB2s with the time we have here. I'll let you take the jump at it.
I think Jordan Mason is probably worth talking about, because it wouldn't shock me if he, outdoes this by, several rounds, like actually becomes a decent fantasy starter, a low end option, but still a guy that you could put in your lineup week after week. And it comes down to Aaron Jones just being an older back and a guy who's dealt with a ton of injuries, missed 11 games over the last three seasons. And it sounds like what we're hearing out of Minnesota is that Mason looks more like the lead back in that offense. Now, it's never going to be a total workhorse role for him, because if it's not Aaron Jones, then it goes to the other Viking on this list, and Damon Claiborne, who Aaron Jones has been talking up as a really explosive player. and somebody that I think would step into an Aaron Jones kind of role, more of a change of pace guy alongside Mason. But even if you go back to all the struggles that the Vikings had last year, and we've gone over it with the offensive line injuries and JJ McCarthy and all of that, when Jones was out of the lineup, you know, for over a month early in the season, week 3 to week 7, Mason was the RB16 in fantasy points per game. So there is a bit of a ceiling. It's not a league-winning ceiling, but he has a little more to him than I think people are giving him credit for. And this ADP makes no sense at this point. I think he deserves a little bit better. So he's one. And then to look at, I said my piece in recent weeks on sort of these three deeper rookie backs and Jonah Coleman and Nicholas Singleton and Claiborne as these guys who are kind of third on the depth chart, pushing for the number two role. But are they really third on the depth chart? Because if the starter goes down, I think there's a chance that those guys have really, really big roles in the backfield. And especially with Coleman and Singleton, I think they might be the next man up in terms of being the lead back in the backfield, while the other guy in RJ Harvey and Tajay Spears, they have kind of these pass catching roles and they would stay in similar types of roles while these other rookies vaulted up. So these are all players that I'm drafting as much as I can late in drafts, scooping up everywhere. And I feel like they're going to be players that I'm going to talk about in the waiver wire column early in the season, because we're going to see them get some opportunities, play well. Maybe the veterans start to take a step back and we'll have these guys on all of our rosters by midseason.
Yeah. Coleman, I think I like more than Singleton just because I like the player and the team better. But yeah, Singleton definitely deserves a mention here as well. I'll just quickly note on Jaden Blue and Marshawn Lloyd, who I would obviously co-sign as sleepers as well. I think Jaden Blue's got the better path to standalone value than Marshawn Lloyd does. Like if Josh Jacobs is out there and he's Josh Jacobs, I think he just runs the show. But Jaden Blue is not going to eat into a ton of Javonte Williams' workload. But I shared this stat today with Nate on the NFC East preview. The Cowboys last year on their running back runs were 7th in EPA, 4th in stuff rate, so 4th best in stuff rate, 6th in success rate on their running back runs, but 19th in explosive run rate. And that's what Jaden Blue can bring, is obviously the explosive runs. So I really like those two guys as late round sleepers. Boone, hell of a show, brother. We previewed the running back position. We disagreed in some spots. We found common ground. And, you know, that's the type of guys we are. You know, unite, common ground, middle ground, find consensus here, reach across the aisle. We love to see it.
You know me, when it comes to running backs, let's do another half hour. I could keep going. We could go deeper here, Harmon, these deep like dynasty stashes. That's how you uncover the George Halanis that we get excited about in the offseason. That's how you uncover the Phil Moffas, right, who could have a role in Dallas. Like there's a lot of deep backs that we'll talk about on future episodes, and people can go check out our rankings for where we have those guys as, you know, deep stashes, late round picks, or maybe even waiver wire options.
Well, stay tuned for the super mega premium feed where Boone does 90 minutes on the likes of Keaton Mitchell, which there actually would be people that would pay for the premium feed on Keaton Mitchell. You know, maybe we can get him on Emmett Johnson. So stay tuned for that one.
Ollie Gordon, I'm kidding, by the way, in Miami, maybe a sneaky number two back in Miami this year. Anyway, moving on.
You keep saying this. There are definitely people that would tune in for that show. So don't sign yourself up for more work, pal. But that is going to do it for us today on this show. And reminder, folks, it is Yahoo Fantasy Football's 29th year. And to celebrate, we are kicking off 29 days of fantasy. Today, Yahoo Fantasy announced the addition of Tight End Premium. You can now set custom tight end point values for your league with the Yahoo Fantasy Commissioner tools and boost their values. Great time for that, by the way, because tomorrow we are going to wrap up positional preview week with the tight end position with Nate Tice. Yes, that's right. That pod is going to be live at 4 p.m. Eastern right here on YouTube. Nobody loves these hand in the dirt, true Y tight ends more than Nate Tice. So be here with us tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern. Until then, we are out.